Two very cool-headed guests will be joining us for this heatwave edition of The Week in Review. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, July 6th. Our excessive heat warning for southern Wisconsin continues until 10 o'clock tonight. High temperatures once again in the south, getting into the triple digits. We will try to keep the hot air to a minimum during our weekly roundup of top state and national political news of the week this hour, but we will welcome in your comments about the issues you would like to talk about, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll certainly talk about the new jobs numbers, the jobs report just released this morning, a disappointing jobs report, and talk about other issues being discussed on the presidential campaign trail during this Independence Day week, from immigration reform to healthcare. We will welcome in our guest now. Happy to have with us Ed Filone, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And Chris Lotto, former Communications Director of the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, Joy.
So how are you handling this heat wave, Chris?
Staying indoors as much as possible. You know, it's funny. I try to get outside a little bit and tried to walk the other day, but it's so oppressive. It just kind of sucks the breath right out of you. So I gave up on that whole outside exercise thing pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's really something. I don't remember it ever being this way in Wisconsin. Ed Filone, any comment on the weather?
I grew up in Washington, D.C., so this is actually quite comfortable.
So you're used to this, sort of. But, yeah, I mean, really, what a bunch of... did you hear that newscast? Very sad. An 83-year-old Beloit woman did die because of the heat. There's unhealthy air pollution going on. You don't want to jump in the lakes because of blue-green algae. Highways are buckling all over. So Chris, we're not used to this so much.
No. The answer is hide in your basement.
Well, we'll talk about... We'll talk about other issues in the news during this holiday week, but let's talk about this jobs report that just was released. 80,000 jobs created in June. Economists were thinking it was going to be better than that, at least 90 or maybe 100,000 jobs, and even that was considered disappointing. Ed Filone, your reaction to this this slow recovery we're apparently struggling with?
Yeah, we're really just treading water in the economy, and that's not a good thing. You always expect increases in employment to lag behind, increases in business incomes and revenues. So you always expect unemployment to stay high longer and then slowly improve. But we're not seeing that improvement. I think it's because companies are hoarding their cash. They're not hiring. The lack of any European market right now is really hurting U.S. companies. They don't have that export market available because the European economies are in the tank. And I think there's huge uncertainty about our federal budget and the looming showdown and the lack of any budget deal that might avert a shutdown of the government. So all of this uncertainty is causing companies to avoid hiring. I think what we really need is some government spending right now to stimulate job creation, coupled with a budget that ramps down spending in future years. That means we need a deal, and we need cooperation between the two political parties, and I'm not very optimistic.
Your reaction to the jobs report, Chris Lotto?
Well, to Ed's point that, if we need more government spending to stimulate job growth, then obviously Obama's your guy. I think that you start to look at these things through, the presidential politics prism. It's obviously not particularly good news for President Obama, as you alluded to earlier, Joy. The Bloomberg News economist survey suggested that we would see, job growth in June of about 100,000 jobs. We obviously fell, short of that. And really what we're seeing right now is the status quo, low numbers of jobs being created, an unemployment rate that stays really stuck at just over 8% and really not budging. And we have 4 months to go till Election Day. So I think it's now time that the voters are going to be asking themselves, well, you know, are we better off as a nation than we were 4 years ago? And who are we going to trust to get us out of this? Because things are not happening at a pace that's I think, rapid enough for people to be satisfied with the direction of this nation.
Mm-hmm. Not good news for President Obama, Ed Falon?
Well, I think that this is Chris's response is actually the problem, is that everything gets turned into the political prism and spun for political purposes. The slow economic growth is not an issue of political advantage for one candidate or disadvantage for another. The slow political growth is something that causes real pain, real harm to people all over the country, and our government should take positive steps to address it and to kind of sit back and use it as part of a blame game and spin it your way you want to. I think that's part of the problem in Washington.
Well, I think Ed's making an assumption here about what I said. I am not happy to see that job growth isn't expanding more. I don't think most people in this nation are. I can't imagine that most people would be. People don't like to see other people in pain in this country. But I think to the point that let's spend more money, let's throw more money out there after we're already reaching historic spending levels, levels that this nation cannot afford any longer, that's exactly the wrong direction to go. So in that sense, yeah, this is a political question. It's a question of which policy, which philosophy is better served to get this nation out of this.
You know, and Chris, how do you respond to criticism from Democrats that the GOP is sabotaging efforts to try to improve the economy for political reasons?
Well, I'm not sure specifically what they're referring to. They have the White House. They've had the power for a good chunk of this past 4 years. So, you know, when the news is bad, the finger pointing begins, and I think that's what you're seeing here.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's it going to take, Chris Lotto, to improve the situation?
Well, I mean, I think it takes a different philosophy from what we've seen under the Obama administration and Democrats in Congress. I mean, that's where the political pitch comes in here. But what we need is somebody in here who is focused on job growth, but is not focused on historic middle class tax increases. That is not focused on spending that we as a nation are not in a position to afford, particularly when the economy is in such rough shape. We do need a change in direction in how a government is managing its affairs. We need to get our federal budget balanced. We need to do away with the excessive spending that's digging the hole ever deeper, and it's going to make it that much harder for our kids and grandkids to get out of. So, I mean, these things do matter. The election in 4 months, 4 months from today, does matter because it is going to determine the direction of our nation.
Yep, and maybe Ed Falon, Mitt Romney would be a better job creator than President Obama?
Highly unlikely. What we're hearing from Chris is what Paul Krugman refers to when he says that ideology in favor of small federal government trumps all economic theory. To say that we can't afford spending is to make all kinds of implausible assumptions about the federal government. The federal government can spend any money it wants. The question is, to what purpose? And long term, what's the deficit result going to be? You spend in the short term, and you cut in the out years, and that's the way to stimulate the economy. To simply declare philosophically, we can't afford it. You know, 1 cent of new spending to create jobs today is to abdicate all kinds of responsibility.
Well, we've already seen huge amounts of federal spending, so-called stimulus spending, and the jobs report this morning gives you an indication of where we're at. So, you know, how's that working out for you?
Well, Chris, I mean, 3 years ago we had a stimulus. It's now become apparent based on economic evidence that it wasn't big enough. Your response is, well, we tried a little bit before, so it's done forever. My response is, you look at the evidence. If more is needed, yeah, give it more juice.
Yeah, a little bit is, I think, an interesting way to classify it. I would say that most people would argue it's a lot more than a little bit.
Let's take a caller, John in Appleton. Hello, John.
Yeah, I think some comparison on the jobs report would be to when Obama took office and the economy was losing in the vicinity of 800, as many as 900,000 jobs each and every month. I mean, this is a huge turnaround. Is it enough? No. I mean, but consider that this is no ordinary recession. I think economist Christina Romer said that this, you know, the shock to the economy from the financial implosion was worse than that of the Great Depression. And the Great Depression then unemployment reached a high of 25%. So, I mean, I give credit to the Bush administration for their kind of backing off from their ideology and really getting involved in the economy. And but I think the Republicans have just, you know, their ideology has been, and their, you know, political need to hate Obama has just trumped everything.
Let me get our guest Chris Lotto to respond to that.
Yeah, I mean, well, there wasn't really a question. I mean, I will say this. I think that, you know, we're obviously not, it's not one person and it's not one president that determines, you know, and has complete control over where our economy goes. We are obviously at the mercy to a certain extent of where the global economy goes. And to assume that we're this isolated piece of the puzzle where we don't feel the impact from elsewhere, it just doesn't work that way. So to a certain degree, you know, we are at the mercy of where the world economy is going. But that said, you know, there is certainly a natural tendency among voters to say, well, look at who the guy is who's on top, and that's the guy who gets the credit or the blame. And I think that's, you know, a reasonable thing to do as part of the mix of issues that you're considering when you're, for example, looking at a president. So you can take a look at these numbers and where they're at right now, like the caller pointed out, and say, well, gee, this is good enough. You can say this is fine. This is as good as it's going to get for a while. Whatever you want to say to rationalize where things are at, you know, go for it. And if you're an Obama supporter, then you see some silver lining here. But if you think the nation can do better, we have done better in the past, and we can do better in the future, then you start to look at the alternatives.
Ed Flone?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously the caller is well informed and cites to evidence in support of his opinion. And I think that that's what we need, is we need to get beyond this sort of reduction argument that if we simply change who's in charge, everything will get better. And we need to look at the global economy. We need to look at U.S. spending priorities. We need to look at long-term deficit reduction. And we need to do what rational people do. You make some decisions based on the evidence. You stick with it. You don't flit around from policy to policy in a panic. And, you know, hopefully we can actually take some positive steps if we simply look at the evidence.
We are talking with Ed Flone, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University, and Chris Lotto, a former communications director of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, a GOP campaign consultant, about the news of the week. If you have a topic you would like them to discuss, an issue from the news this week, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We have spent the first part of the program talking about the new federal jobs report that was just released this morning. We'll talk about other news from this week, including President Obama on the 4th of July calling for immigration reform. We'll also talk about the ongoing reaction to the Supreme Court health care ruling. And more. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Ed Flone and Chris Lotto. Coming up this afternoon after 4, it's Your Views on the News. You can join Ben Marins and his guest during At Issue after 4 to call in and talk about what you think was the week's most important news story. You can also call us now with a topic you would like our guest to discuss at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. President Obama was speaking on Independence Day at a ceremony, and he called for new immigration laws, and he also talked about his recent order lifting the threat of deportation for hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants who came to the United States as children. I'm wondering, during this Independence Day week, Ed Flone, whether you think immigration is going to be a big issue in this presidential campaign?
Well, I think Obama's clearly a little more comfortable talking about immigration reform again after spending several years ramping up deportations and trying to show that he was serious about enforcing the law. I think he now feels He has established his credentials that he can talk a little bit more about easing and reforming the law, which I think there's widespread agreement between business and Latino groups that there needs to be some serious reform in our system. I think it's a sign that Latino voters who had become a bit distanced from the Obama administration due to their harsh deportation policies are maybe coming back home to Obama. And I think this is just a bad topic for Mitt Romney to talk about it through the political prism because Romney's a bit boxed in. He can't talk about reform in any serious way without alienating his base or backtracking from positions he took in the Republican primaries. It just sort of leaves him on the sidelines while Obama can stake out a middle position. And I don't see it as being a decisive issue in the campaign because I think Romney's been boxed out.
What do you think, Chris Latto?
Well, I think it's almost certainly good politics for the president. I mean, I think he kind of, during his own campaign 4 years ago, sort of overpromised and has since undelivered on immigration reform in his first term. He's obviously waking up to the fact that he's going to need the Hispanic vote in November. That's why you see things like the speech he gave this week. Mitt Romney has made it clear that he opposes the president's directive that would let the hundreds of thousands of young illegal immigrants stay in the country. Mitt Romney has stated pretty clearly there should be no special path to citizenship. Those who come here illegally don't deserve special passes. Now, that said, we haven't seen a whole lot of specifics from Mitt Romney either, to be fair. You know, the old political rule of thumb is that the more specific you get, the more ammo you give your opponents. But frankly, some more specifics in this case from Mitt Romney would be welcome, in my opinion.
Yeah. Speaking of Mitt Romney's campaign, this week there's been some fallout from the U.S. Supreme Court ruling upholding the Affordable Care Act. And what I'm seeing is Mitt Romney's campaign saying the individual mandate was not a tax. Yes, it was. No, it wasn't. Yes, it was. Chris Latto, is this a tough issue for Mitt Romney now that since he was the author of health care reform in Massachusetts, which also had this individual mandate?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's one of his biggest problems, particularly with conservatives. You know, I think this the thing you allude to this week is somebody, I think an advisor or somebody on Mitt Romney's campaign staff, classifying. Not classifying the individual mandate as a tax, and then Mitt Romney himself came out and said, no, it's a tax. Whether that was miscommunication or whatever, I think it's a blip on the radar. However, I do think it exposes some of the deeper challenges that Mitt Romney faces. For him to have to say, on the one hand, in Massachusetts, he did what he felt was right on health care, and to many, especially conservatives in this country, seems to contradict what he is now saying about Obamacare, that we have to do away with it. So, yeah, that's a challenge for Mitt Romney. Whether it's a tax or not, the larger issue, the Supreme Court decided it that way. The IRS collects it. You pay it on your income tax returns. Federal government is going to count what it collects as tax dollars. So, if it looks like a duck, waddles like a duck, and quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. And we're also going to see more taxes on things like medical devices, things like wheelchairs. New drugs are going to be taxed more. Flexible spending accounts are going to be taxed more. So for the Obama administration to embrace the decision from the U.S. Supreme Court, yet at the same time say, well, no, it's not a tax, like the Supreme Court said, it's something else, is I think being disingenuous with the American people.
Yeah, there was a CBS report this week that suggested that Chief Justice Roberts changed his mind on this health care ruling. He was going to rule that the individual mandate was unconstitutional under the Commerce Clause, but then he ended up siding with the justices who wanted to uphold it by saying that the individual mandate was allowable under the federal government's taxing powers. And I'm wondering, Ed Filone, your thoughts on Justice Roberts' decision.
Well, I have a lot of reaction to what's been going on in the aftermath of the ruling. My first reaction is it's very disappointing that we're seeing these leaks from either current sitting justices or their law clerks to the media in the aftermath of, the decision. I think it's very damaging to the court to see this happen, and it's really unprecedented. Obviously, the ruling was a big victory for the Obama administration, and I think the narrative that Justice Roberts switched sides is perhaps a bit misleading. He was confirmed and has always espoused, having a belief that the democratic self-governance of our country should take place, should be allowed to take place. Congress, the political branches should be able to deal with the issues of the nation, and that the Supreme Court, an unelected body, should pretty much stay out of these political decisions. And that's a philosophy he says he follows from Oliver Wendell Holmes and other great justices before him. So I don't really see Justice Roberts' decision as switching sides. I see him as being faithful to what he said was his judicial philosophy all along. I think that what happens oftentimes is that a justice starts writing an opinion, and in the process of putting it onto paper, you know, they say the opinion won't write. The arguments you think you're going to make just don't work out on paper. You're not convincing yourself, and that's when you have to go in a different direction. And I think that's what happened with Justice Roberts. And although I'm not in agreement with everything in his opinion, he did seem to push the envelope a little bit to get to the result he wanted. I do think that he's probably more consistent with his judicial philosophy than his critics are saying.
Your thoughts on this, Chris?
Yeah, well, I was definitely interested in hearing what Ed had to say. I mean, he's the legal here on the show this morning. But you know, I think we can only really speculate about the true motives here. As Ed explained, it's really sort of a secretive process, and without Justice Roberts stepping up himself to explain what he was thinking and why he did what he did, you know, it really is speculation and gossip, really. I've seen very, very simplistic, ways that folks are explaining this away, saying, you know, Justice Roberts went native in just a few years, you know, now this will get him invited to more cocktail parties, he'll be accepted by the Washington establishment. I think that's too simplistic a view. Another going theory is that, you know, the high court that Roberts presides over as Chief Justice, he did not want it seen as the partisan court that blocked Obamacare. The reading that I've done on the decision suggests that it's a rather tortured decision from Justice Roberts that he took to get to the place that he got. And he has obviously alienated the center-right side of the court, you know, that virtually everybody expected Roberts was going to side with. I think the bottom line now is what we see out of this decision is that, you know, despite the Obama administration's claims to the contrary, that this really is a tax, and it's a punitive one at that, and it's coming at a time that's really pretty tough for this nation to have to deal with. I think what's happened now is that this decision has set the high court, the high court has set this up for, a new Congress and a new president to come in and potentially put the brakes on Obamacare. I think that's why things like the U.S. Senate race coming up this fall in Wisconsin, which could be a deciding seat. I think that's why these things are so important this year, now more than perhaps many other recent elections.
Yeah. Well, the main issue is going to be repeal so-called Obamacare or not. Ed Flone, what about that?
Well, I think if you're just going to take the word tax out of the opinion and try and beat political candidates over the head with it, I think that would be a real shame. I think that the people who pay the penalty, and it really, tax lawyers will tell you that it really is a tax penalty, and Justice Roberts is running roughshod over the tax laws. The people who pay the penalty will be the very small percentage of people who choose not to purchase health insurance. Certainly, the vast majority of us who get health insurance either through our employment, our job, or through Medicare, through the government, or other government programs, we're not going to pay the tax. The tax is paid by people who choose not to purchase health insurance and don't have it from another source. So we're talking about a very small segment of the population, the uninsured, that the law was intended to assist and help and make health care affordable. I think that as we go forward, yes, the Republicans are going to try to obstruct the actual implementation and funding of the Health Care Reform Act as much as possible. They're going to drag their feet. And I think going forward, it's going to become increasingly apparent to the American people and the American voter that removing the uncertainty caused by the fear of losing health insurance, getting rid of that uncertainty, is a huge benefit, and I think people are going to want to keep the law.
Pat in Brantwood is with us. Hello, Pat.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. Yes, I'd like to echo the earlier caller that said was talking about Obama's policies, and I've just watched how the Republicans have tried to obstruct him at every turn. For example, not passing the jobs bill, or like the college loan program, they didn't pass until the last minute.
But you wanted to talk about health care and the
yes.
Republican governors, and I need you to talk about that.
Yeah, that too. They didn't allow anyone to lead the Financial Services Bureau because they don't agree with the policy. The governor's saying they won't enact the health care law.
All right, and I'm going to have to, because I thought you wanted to talk specifically about health care. The governors don't want to enact the health care law. I know Governor Walker said he's going to wait until after the November election before he works on these starts implementing it or works on these health exchanges. Is that a good idea or not, Chris Lotto?
Well, I mean, we'd have to see what Governor Walker puts forward. I think you're going to see potentially a number of states stepping up and saying that they don't want to be part of this, that they would rather craft their own solution, their own version of it. And I would imagine that Governor Walker is going to want to do that. I think it's pretty obvious that he's not going to embrace Obamacare if he doesn't have to.
Mm-hmm. Ed Flom?
Well, I think what's telling here is the health care exchanges that the law creates. I have not heard a single informed commentator on either side of the political spectrum who has argued that healthcare exchanges that allow people to comparison shop among private health insurers. I have not heard a single commentator claim that this is a bad idea. I think everyone, both sides of the political spectrum, agrees this is a great idea. And so why not embrace this, especially when the law allows the state to form it on its own and the federal government to essentially fund it? There's really no good reason to refuse to participate in the healthcare exchange formation except for partisan politics.
Yeah. I wanted to let you, Chris Lotto, have an opportunity to talk a little bit more about how important this particular issue is going to be in the U.S. Senate race in Wisconsin. Are you still working with the candidate Mark Newman?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I have helped out the Newman campaign as part of the race. Yes.
Yes, and talk about how big of an issue this is going to be in the primary.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, you have four, I think, solid candidates in this race. I mean, I think that for Republicans, there's really an embarrassment of riches in this campaign. I think that when you look at the individual candidates and what their positions are now, versus, you know, what their positions perhaps have been in the past. I mean, I know that, you know, speaking for Mark Newman, he has embraced repealing Obamacare and replacing it with more of a free market solution as kind of the centerpiece of his campaign. You've seen Tommy Thompson sort of rush to embrace repealing Obamacare when in the past there's a fair amount of evidence to show that he was supportive of it back in the day. You know, you pretty much have at this point anyway for all four candidates as their centerpiece getting rid of Obamacare. But of course, you've got to defeat Tammy Baldwin first. Now, I would argue that at least at this point, I think that Tammy Baldwin is way, way, way too far left for mainstream Wisconsin to embrace. But you can never take these things for granted, and you know you're going to have to work hard at it every day. So we'll see. I mean, it's one of these races that's really been under the radar, in no small part because of all the recalls and the recall election for the governor just recently. And people don't even realize, hey, we're only a few weeks away. I mean, the primary has been moved up to August, so people are going to have to be making their decision on this pretty soon. But I think at the end of the day, you know, we do need a Republican in this seat. Republicans have an excellent opportunity to take this seat away from the Democrats, who, you know, the seat was held by Herb Kohl. So there's a real chance here to have two Republican senators in Washington, D.C. from Wisconsin.
On this issue anyway, Ed Flom, I presume you believe that Tammy Baldwin is on the right side with the people. Most people, you think, in Wisconsin are behind the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with Chris on one point, which is that we're both surprised Mark Newman isn't polling better. But I think that as between the four Republican candidates, Tommy Thompson is probably the strongest against Tammy Baldwin because he's not viewed as the extreme ideologue, despite his recent conversion to the Tea Party tenets. He's really just viewed as someone who's been around Wisconsin politics a long time and who got things done. And I think Wisconsin voters are very pragmatic, and they like to elect public officials who actually take their job seriously and actually try to govern. And so I think Tommy Thompson has a fair amount of goodwill. I think if it's Tammy Baldwin against any of the other three Republican candidates, I think Tammy Baldwin wins because the people of Wisconsin are not very fond of this free market ideology where the citizens of the state are left on their own, government stays out of it, doesn't care. And I think that the Affordable Care Act is just one example of how people want their government to take positive steps to try and improve their lives. They don't want their government to basically shrug their shoulders and say, hey, you're on your own. We're afraid to raise taxes because we want to get reelected, so tough. So I think it's going to be a very interesting campaign, and if it's Tammy Baldwin against Tommy Thompson, it's going to be a real dogfight.
And Joy, I can't let Ed's comment speaking on my behalf let slide. I'm not. He said that I'm surprised that Mark Newman's not polling better. I will say this. I'm not going to let that one go. I think that this is, frankly, early on for this race in a very unusual campaign season where there are changes in the date. You know, really, it's still happening at the end of the summer, the primary. And frankly, most people, including Republicans, are not engaged right now. And I think that in the last, sort of 5 weeks in the run-up to the election, you're going to see people really, now that the 4th of July is over, too, you're really going to start seeing people paying attention. Certain people in this race are getting a bump in the polls just due to name ID. And I think that once everybody kind of bears down on the issues and looks at where people are at now and where they were before, I think Mark Newman's going to emerge from this very strong. But I think right now what you're seeing is the effect of just simple name ID without any sort of issue attachment to any of those names. So, I think these things are going to change, and it's going to be a very fluid race in the final weeks.
Oh, just a quick react from both of you. There's a report out this week that Congressman Paul Ryan of Wisconsin was vetted for the vice presidential job. And there's also talk about other potential VP picks for Mitt Romney. Where do you see this one going, Chris Lotto?
Well, I think that it's hard to say at this point. I think that some of the things that I've read show that Paul Ryan is on a short list of, I think, maybe four Republicans that Mitt Romney is looking at. But, in 2008, nobody saw, Sarah Palin coming. So I think that he is being considered. How seriously, I guess we're going to find out. It's kind of the silly season right now for VP candidates, potential VP candidates, because you're going to see a lot of trial balloons getting floated out there. In the packet of information you provided us this week, there was a mention of Condoleezza Rice being looked at. I don't take that one particularly seriously. But I think you're going to see a lot of names as being the next big thing. And that's kind of, in a sense, a trial balloon to see how people react, to kind of vet them out in the court of public opinion. And, we're still a little ways away before Romney makes his pick. But, I think it'd be a great choice. I think Paul Ryan would be an outstanding choice as vice president. He's young. He's articulate. He's intelligent. He's passionate about what he believes in. He's taken some bold, some would say controversial steps on getting the federal budget under control. But I think Paul Ryan would be an outstanding pick.
What do you think, Ed Flynn?
Well, from the perspective of the Romney campaign, Paul Ryan has a couple pluses. He's a Midwesterner and he's a Catholic. But I think ultimately he fails the main test as a VP candidate from the Romney perspective, and that is they need to have someone who will not overshadow their candidate the way Sarah Palin overshadowed John McCain. And I think Paul Ryan is simply too visible as an economic leader of the Republican Party. If he was on the ticket, the reporters would swarm around him asking him economic policy questions and ignore Mitt Romney's views. So I think, the Romney campaign ultimately is going to pick someone who's very low-key, low-profile, who won't overshadow Mitt Romney, and my guess is it'll be someone your listeners have never heard of.
Ed Filone is an associate professor of law at Marquette University. Chris Lotto is a former communications director of the Republican Party of Wisconsin. And this is our Week in Review. We will have our Week in Review quiz and some Some other issues to discuss, including state issues, a report out on the Wisconsin retirement system, a recount in the Racine State Senate District wrapping up, and more here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the sound of a 4th of July show going wrong this week. A technical glitch caused all of the fireworks that were scheduled for the show to go off at once, and the entire show lasted 15 seconds. In today's Week in Review quiz, where did this fireworks accident take place? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll give you about 10 minutes or so to call in your guess. We will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and we will award you one of the books that we've featured on the program recently. Lots of interesting books in recent days. The Grammar Girl's 101 Troublesome Words That You Will Master in No Time. In Doubt, The Psychology of the Criminal Justice Process. Bike Tribes, A Field Guide to North American Cyclists, among your possible gifts if you win this week's Week in Review quiz. So where did the fireworks accident take place, where the entire show went off in 15 seconds? This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Chris Lotto and Ed Filone about the top national and state stories of the week. Spent most of our time on national politics. Let's talk some about what happened in the state this week. On Monday, a report, a long-anticipated report, came out. And it said that the Wisconsin pension system is in good shape and that it would be risky to change it, that it should not be changed to make it more like a 401k type program. Ed Filone, your reaction to this report saying that the Wisconsin retirement system should stay the way it is?
I think that rule number one that we all learn from our parents is if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I think it's very wise to avoid fixing the pension system when there's no problem with it. It's well-funded. It's operating well. The workers have their benefits safe and secure at the moment. I look at it through the perspective of why are we so happy that the governor actually left it alone? I see this as perhaps a step in the maturing of Governor Walker. Maybe 900,000 recall signatures sent the message to go slow. Don't try and change everything at once, and maybe he listened.
Chris Lotto?
No, I think a 7-point win in the election sent a very different message than Ed is referring to. But I think there's an awful lot of hand wringing going on over what Governor Walker is going to do. But I think it's time to take a deep breath and wait to see what, if anything, is proposed. I mean, the governor and Republican leaders in the legislature have all gone on the record saying they're not planning at this time to make any substantial changes to the pension system. Reports are out there that show that the system is running pretty well. So I think it's important to take a step back, take a deep breath, and not go into automatic attack Walker mode when we have nothing to attack him on. And I think when the next budget cycle comes around next year, we'll see what happens again, if anything. But I don't think there's anything that we need to be wringing our hands about right now.
This is like the dog that doesn't bark. It's a news story that Walker's leaving well enough alone.
All right. Let's. Here's something that just was in the news this morning, and we don't have a lot of information here, but according to reports, Wisconsin will get a waiver from the federal government today on the No Child Left Behind education law. 26 states have gotten these waivers now, allowing them more flexibility on education than the No Child Left Behind law allows. Is this a good thing for Wisconsin, Chris Lotto?
Well, I think that, you know, what you're seeing probably is states that are saying, you know, they're taking a look at what the federal government has enacted and said, you know, okay, there's good things that we can do here, but we as states would like to do better. And I think that we'll have to, again, see what comes out of the, you know, the administration and education leaders in Wisconsin, what they want to do that they could not do with No Child Left Behind, you know, in place. But, you know, we have, as a state, a great history of being innovators and leaders. We have an education system where our kids in general are doing well. There are obviously certain problems that we have in this state, certain school districts that are most definitely not meeting up to the standards that we should expect from our education system. So we'll have to wait and see what they come up with. There's certainly always room for improvement, so we'll have to see what they put forward.
Do you think getting a waiver from No Child Left Behind is a good thing, Ed Filone?
I happen to think it is. I think that, you know, this is an area where I do believe decentralization in education and allowing individual states and school districts to have a little more freedom is a good thing. The Obama administration has very incrementally been shifting the priorities away from No Child Left Behind and on a very slow incremental basis has been sort of steering the aircraft carrier in the opposite direction, giving more power back to the states. It's not a full-scale repeal of the law, but it's very clear that the centralization of public education is over.
Another story that we didn't warn either of you about was in the news this morning, that a lower court is asking the Supreme Court to step in to the question as to whether the domestic partnership law in Wisconsin is constitutional. Under that amendment, the Wisconsin constitutional amendment that banned gay marriage in the state. Ed Filone, what kind of insight can you give us on this?
Well, what's going on right now is that there's a lot of jockeying. There's several legal challenges around the country to various state laws and state constitutional provisions prohibiting gay marriage. And what happens in this situation is that interest groups who want to achieve a particular legal objective, and this applies to, you know, the attacks on the Affordable Care Act, to school desegregation efforts back in the 40s, interest groups try to bring a series of cases challenging different similar laws, different fact patterns, to bring the issue in front of the U.S. Supreme Court on the most favorable factual and legal basis for their side. And so what you see now boiling up from the various lower federal courts are a series of challenges to a variety of state laws and constitutional provisions, trying to posture which case is going to be the best to get in front of the Supreme Court to increase the likelihood that the Supreme Court might issue an opinion broadly favorable to same-sex marriage. I think it's very difficult to know whether this particular case is going to be the one to make any headway. I think there are other cases further along in the pipeline that the Supreme Court is more likely to deal with first. So right now, I'd just take a wait-and-see position.
Yeah. Any comment on the state Supreme Court being asked to rule on this domestic partnership registry, Chris Lotto?
Well, I think Ed's kind of the sharper legal mind here. I mean, I think we have to wait and see if the Supreme Court even decides to take it up. But as he pointed out, there are challenges like this kind of bubbling up across the country, and it's really one where we'll have to take a wait-and-see attitude whether challenging a constitutional amendment, you know, enacted by the voters of Wisconsin is going to be able to withstand that kind of scrutiny.
Mm-hmm. Also in the news this week, there was a recount that wrapped up in the Racine Senate district. The recount is done. Democrat John Lehman kept his lead. He's calling on Republican incumbent Van Wongard to concede, but apparently Van Wongard is considering a legal challenge, saying there were voting irregularities. Well, Chris Lotto, what about this?
Well, it's obviously within his rights to file a court challenge. You know, this was always the seat that appeared to be the most vulnerable, and certainly in the most recent round of you know, never-ending recall challenges. I guess in this case, I would be a little reluctant to drag this out any longer than necessary. I'm not sure that there's you know, enough evidence to support the kind of widespread problems that would be needed here to reverse the recount results. You know, and I think Wangard, you know, from a purely PR perspective, runs the risk of damaging his political brand, you know, that is looking kind of like a sore loser by refusing to accept the results. And it's something that he needs to consider if this doesn't go his way and he wants to run for political office in the future. I mean, if he's convinced he has a strong case, by all means, go for it. Otherwise, it might be time to think about stepping aside and plotting your next move.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Ed Flan?
I think it's always dangerous to start yelling fraud if you can't point to any sort of evidence or indicia to support that claim. I think that it would be a mistake to try and drag this out. We've had the recount now. There seem to be a few isolated polling place irregularities, but nothing that suggests widespread fraud that could have any way affected the result. So it's time to move on. And I think we should all enjoy what may be a very short-lived period of democratic control of the state Senate and some actual deliberative democracy in Wisconsin. Let's enjoy it while we can.
But there's not going to be much happening between now and the election that might change things, Ed Flan.
Well, sometimes nothing happening is a good thing.
Well, what about, so you're not convinced that Democrats can hold on to the state Senate?
Well, you know, there's still plenty of time to go before that election race, and I'm really trying to take a breather between mm-hmm. all the political campaigns here and just enjoy the moment.
Well, here's another story, very briefly, since we're almost out of time. Senator Alberta Darling wants to make the third drunk driving offense a felony. Quick thoughts on that, Ed Flan?
Well, this is how cynical I am about how the process works. I think in my opinion, the Tavern League has probably come, the lobbying group in favor of taverns and liquor distributors, has probably come to the conclusion that the writing's on the wall. There will be reform to Wisconsin's very lax drunk driving laws. And when you reach that conclusion, what you try to do is you try to push a modest reform package in order to control the reforms instead of letting the more extreme or stiff reforms pass. And so that's how I view the Darling efforts as probably industry-backed and probably a more modest reform than maybe the rest of us would like.
Is that how you see it, Chris Lotto?
Well, I think to, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater, I mean, is a mistake. I mean, it would be probably, I almost certainly, it's at least a step in the right direction. I think that, you know, there are some other ideas being floated around out there, such as sobriety checkpoints that will almost certainly be controversial and will not be as well liked. I mean, I think the idea of making a third OWI conviction a felony is one that may find traction in Wisconsin. You know, we've had this endless love affair with beer and taverns. It's never ending in Wisconsin. But I think, you know, I think the sense is out there that attitudes are becoming less permissive toward drunk driving, and this is a move to address that.
Well, we will have Senator Darling with us on Monday during our state capitol report. She'll be with us from 7:30 until 8 talking about this plan to make the third drunk driving offense a felony. All right, time to announce the winner of the Week in Review quiz and the answer. Paul is our winner. Congratulations, Paul. He emailed us the correct answer that the fireworks accident that caused a 20-minute show to go off all at once for a total of 15 seconds was in San Diego. Thousands of spectators gathered in San Diego on Wednesday night to see the annual Big Bay Boom on the 4th of July, but there was some sort of glitch, the technical error that caused the entire show's pyrotechnics to launch at once, causing four giant fireballs in the sky. Organizers canceled the show after the mishap, and the company behind the fireworks display said they are working to determine what caused this to happen, and they apologized. Well, we'll leave it there. Chris Lotto and Ed Flan, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Thanks, Joy.
Ed Flan, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University. Chris Lotto, former Communications Director of the Republican Party of Wisconsin. Thanks to Rob Ferret, to Bill Martins, to Naya Mukherjee, and to Amanda Magnus for producing these programs. I'm Joy Kerdine. This is the Ideas Network.